98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Big League Blast.
Desperation matters in contact sports, especially the ones filled with violence. The Vikings will feel a very common form of that desperation on Sunday. It's the we do not want to be 0-2 kind of desperation. So, will the Cardinals match the mood? Will the Cardinals feel the same way about being 1-1? And that is why Sunday's game is more about their temperament than their talent. Too many times last season, the Cardinals took the field unfocused and underprepared. Kyler Murray called it complacency. Whatever the reasons, they didn't always bring the requisite heat to the field, which is why they were so inconsistent. Now, after last year's collapse, GM Steve Keim said he was going to upgrade the physicality and the level of character in the locker room. Well, we saw the physicality in week one, and now we need to see the character in week two. Because if the Cardinals have truly learned their lesson, they will match Minnesota's desperation and then some. That means they will have effectively blocked out all the love and all the praise they've been hearing over the past week. It means they understand the opportunity ahead is greater than what's in the rearview mirror, and it means they will have truly grown as a football team, maybe even enough to thrive in the NFC West. Today's Bickley Blast, brought to you by my great friends at Chapman BMW. Test drive the ultimate driving machine this weekend at the newly renovated Chapman BMW in Chandler at Chapman BMW on Camelback. You can find them online at chapmanbmw.com.
Not just any Bickley Blast, the birthday Bickley Blast.
The Bickley Birthday Blast.
Yes. The Bickley Birthday Blast.
Now, I want to give a nod to Jared Carlin, because I caught on fairly early in the show that all the music that we're playing, rejoins and whatnot, it's all AC/DC. He's given me a heavy plate of AC/DC this morning.
It's all AC/DC, but I ran out of AC/DC.
That's impossible.
I'm transitioning to another... It'll be all your favorite bands today.
Okay.
Stevie Ray Vaughan coming up.
Alice in Chains coming up.
Any requests you want, but I'm not going to give it away right now.
Okay. Menudo?
No. Not that. All right, so we got a football game on Sunday that really is going to be sort of like a thermometer. It's going to be a heat check for this football team. How good do you guys really think you are? If they take the field, last year, like I said in the blast, there were times, Carolina, other games, when they took the field and they just weren't, they didn't have that football rage going on. They just didn't. And they had
it
against.
Tap into the rage dream.
Right. And they certainly did that against Tennessee. So the question becomes, the physicality we saw in week one, will it be there from the get-gate in week two? Or was that more just Chandler Jones coming out and saying, I'm making a statement right here and now?
It does, to me, this game on Sunday doesn't align on the same point of the schedule as a game from last year. But the feel is the same as the Week 3 game against Detroit. The Cardinals started out with the road victory in San Francisco, and it was hard not to be impressed. They came from behind. They shifted the tide of that game with a big special teams play. And they found a way to beat a San Francisco team, which in that game was the most whole they were all year in terms of injuries.
Yep.
That was a good first step.
Mm-hmm.
They come home. They beat the Washington football team rather handily by 15 points. There was a real feeling going into that week three game against the Detroit Lions. Okay, this team might be something. And you're right. They were flat. They got beat by a bad Lions team who admittedly was much better in the first half of the season than the second half. And that followed them to Carolina, which was one of the most flat performances we've seen in a long time from the Cardinals. So that feel of the Detroit game, and maybe it's a good thing that you're not going up against a team in Minnesota that you can just, on the surface, dismiss. The Vikings weren't good in week one, but I think most people would agree they're a better football team than what they put out there in week one. So I don't think there's going to be, hey, we were really good in week one and the Vikings, they're not good, let's overlook them. I think that's eliminated, but the feel of the game is the same.
Yeah.
If last week, which everybody termed, it's not a statement game, it's a first step in the process. If this is your second step, you have an opportunity to, rage a little bit like you did in week one, because I think there's a lot of similarities between the two teams, the Titans and the Vikings. And then we're talking about, you know, this Cardinals team. If that happens and they handle it properly, we're talking about a 2-0 team going on the road to Jacksonville.
To Jacksonville with the opportunity of being 3-0 before you play the Rams, and sign me up for that. Now, a couple things about this. When I look at this Cardinals team and I see and I kind of project what this game is going to look like, I think the Titans made a big tactical error, and here's what I think happened. I think that preseason game against the Chiefs in which the offense had -1 yards in 3 series, the one that caused me great angst and others, I think the Titans watched that film and said, ooh, Kyler Murray does not like being blitzed. See how fast he went down? Do you see how uninterested he was in making plays? And I think they might have based that strategy on how susceptible the Cardinals offense looked to blitzing Chiefs in that preseason game. And true to what you said, Kyler Murray just treats preseason football like it's, well, preseason football. And he dealt with the blitz very well in week one. I don't think the Vikings are going down that path. So I think the Cardinals offense is going to have to win a game a different way, but I think they've got the weapons to do so. And I think there's a great opportunity here because, and more to the point, it's a great litmus test for just how hungry this football team is. Just exactly what is the chip on this team's shoulder? It was there in week one. Now, if it's there in week two, they might blow the doors off this Vikings team as well.
Yeah. To your point about the blitz, a perfect quarterback rating on the old metric is 158.3. Kyler Murray was 0.7 points away from having a perfect quarterback rating against the blitz in week one.
Wow.
5 of 6 for 74 yards, 2 touchdowns. He was sacked for a 7-yard loss, but a rating of 157.6. He was really good against the blitz. You know, as we get further removed from that preseason 9-play sample, it means even less. I would hope Kyler Murray wouldn't try to be a hero and beat the blitz and stand in there and take punishment in a preseason game. So, you know, the first sampling was good. Here's the thing, though. I have a breakdown of what everybody did in week one against the blitz. It's surprising how high the quarterback ratings are against the blitz.
Is that right?
Yeah, at least. And I don't know if this is an anomaly, but Kyler Murray, Russell Wilson, Joe Burrow were all 150-plus against the blitz. There were 17 different quarterbacks who had a quarterback rating of 100 or better.
Wow.
100's a really good rating.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, apropos of nothing.
No, I did not know that. That's very interesting.
Only 3 quarterbacks in week one threw interceptions against the blitz. Dak Prescott, who also had 3 touchdowns in the same scenario. Baker Mayfield and Tom Brady. You know what Tom Brady's rating against the blitz was against Dallas? 68.8.
Wow.
There was one starter lower than him, and that was Tyrod Taylor. But, look, I agree with you that, you know, Tennessee came after Kyler Murray. Not exclusively. They picked their spots. He made them pay.
He did.
Especially with some adjustments at the line. I think you'll probably see less of that. I think with Mike Zimmer's pedigree as a defensive mind, you'll see what you've referred to and others have referred to as that mush rush.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of creating a net, if you will, to keep Kyler Murray in the pocket. And our conversation with Stephen Ruiz, and again, read that piece that he put on the Ringer. It was really, really informative. There's a lot of doubt on how comfortable Kyler Murray can be long-term in the pocket as an NFL passer.
And that's going to have to be so if Kyler Murray likes to leave the pocket when it closes it in on him a little bit, I'm going to be very curious to see how this all plays out this week because I think the Cardinals can do what the 2015 team did. And if you remember that team, they came out, they beat the Saints at home. They went on the road to Chicago. David Johnson returned the opening kick for a touchdown. Remember that?
Yep.
Blew him out 48-23. 49ers came to town the next week. They had 2 pick-sixes in the first quarter, beat the 49ers by 40.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I talk about really good teams declaring themselves, that's what I'm talking about.
Well, yeah. And I said earlier in the show that 25-point victories are not commonplace, but if it happens again, okay, then you got something. If you got back-to-back blowout wins against 2 pretty good football teams, then you got something. By the way, Ed Corbett was caller number 5 back when we called for him. So Ed jumped in, stole those tickets to the home opener on Sunday against the Vikings. You can text Red Sea right now to 620-620 and listen for your name at 135 and 335, you could be, win a pair of tickets to that home opener. Plus, one grand prize winner will score an autographed Kyler Murray jersey, courtesy of Pristine Auction. That's Red Sea to 620-620. Coming up next, a lot of intriguing games on the Week 2 NFL schedule. We'll dive into some of them next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings on this Football Friday, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Football Friday with Bickley and Murata, presented by 72 Sold, 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
We've won a lot of games around here. We've lost a few, but you move on. You know, doesn't matter if you play incredible and put up 50 or you get blown out. You move on to the next opponent. There shouldn't be some big drastic change and alteration the way that we do things, the way we practice, the way we prepare. If it's good enough to get you to this point, then it's good enough from this point forward. So I haven't changed any of the stuff that I've been doing. Obviously, you know, we got to play better. But if we're starting to freak out after 1 week, we're in big trouble.
That is Aaron Rodgers, the quarterback of the Green Bay Packers, and still not the host of Jeopardy. Passed over again, by the way.
Yeah. Temporarily, at least.
He has stopped doing certain things. He stopped cutting his hair.
That's true.
That's for one. That's Aaron Rodgers' 2021 version of the relaxed speech.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. Not nearly as convincing.
No. Obviously, we need to play better. That might be the understatement going into week two of the entire league. The Packers looked absolutely ill-prepared to compete with the New Orleans Saints, who were a team that was going through a lot of turmoil. First start without Drew Brees on the roster. Jameis Winston looks like he's up for the challenge. They are a team that's been displaced by weather conditions, practicing in Dallas, playing a home game in Jacksonville.
It's a bad look.
It looked like adversity was all on Green Bay's side.
It was a bad look, and Aaron Rodgers invited all of this, and he's feeling all of it going into this game, and this is one of those games where if there isn't an appropriate response from Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, this story is going to get nuts.
Yeah.
Because Aaron Rodgers brought all this on. He brought all of this to light. He created all of this drama. And he can blame it on the Packers and their GM and for whatever, but his responsibility is to be ready to win football games. And Packers certainly didn't look right. They didn't have the fire. They didn't have the connectivity. They didn't have a lot of stuff. So yeah, I'm interested. I don't think Detroit's going to give them a game, but if they do, this story is going to get crazy.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people that are in the camp of okay. Aaron Rodgers, he got the wake-up call. He's not going to put out two straight games like he did. That was one of his worst starts of his career. It was the worst point differential he suffered in a loss in his NFL career. Mm-hmm. So, expect Aaron Rodgers to throw for 400 yards and 5 touchdowns. Dan Campbell, the head coach of the opposition, the Detroit Lions, might be one of those people.
New Orleans kicked the hornet's nest, so we're going to get everything they've got. And we have to assume we're going to get their A game, and that's how we're preparing.
And that's at Lambeau as well. Yeah, we'll have to wait till Monday night. That's the Monday night game. But I think there's a couple of really good matchups on this week's schedule.
Okay.
Buffalo let one slip away last week. They let Pittsburgh back in that game. They're on the road at Miami, who already won a division game against the New England Patriots in week one. Mm-hmm. I think that's a pretty intriguing matchup.
I think it's a great matchup, and I think it's could you imagine the city of Buffalo just tripping if their team goes 0-2 to start the season? Miami's got a good team, and Tua just beat the Patriots for the second time in 3 tries. This is a tricky matchup for the Bills. You know, this is a team that was being bandied about as a potential Super Bowl champion this year. And we talked in the preseason about if you're going to stack up the great stories in the NFL, they're one of them. Just given everything that fan base is about, given their history of heartbreak, the 4 consecutive Super Bowl losses, now they've got everything.
Oh,
including,
come on, Bick. They're over that by now.
Nah, who could ever be over that?
Very true.
Could you imagine if that was us, if you had a football team that lost 4 straight Super Bowls?
I'd be the team captain of, hey, at least we made it 4 straight times. Yeah. I'd be the captain of that team.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. So to me, that's a very tricky game, and a lot of pressure on Buffalo to win that game, and that's going to be difficult.
Another good game.
Mm-hmm.
Raiders on the road at Pittsburgh.
The Raiders.
Both teams finding a way to win in Week One. The Raiders doing it in overtime. The Pittsburgh doing it against Buffalo, coming back in that game. I think that's an intriguing matchup. How about San Francisco going on the road to play Philly in an early game, East Coast? I thought the Eagles were going to be hot garbage this year.
No.
They still might be. They had the second biggest point differential in Week One. They beat Atlanta by 26 points, and that was a matchup of two coaches coaching their first game with their respective teams, and Philadelphia looked way more prepared to play.
Listen, I've been saying this for a while. I don't know why people just don't see Jalen Hurts as a potential star in this league. I know there was a lot of weirdness in Philly at the end of last year with Doug Peterson, but this kid he's always shown that little something-something. So I would not be surprised if they bite San Francisco this weekend.
Who was the quarterback that Doug Peterson put in late in the game?
Oh, who was that guy?
Yeah, versus the Washington football team at the end of the year.
Yeah, who was that guy?
And everybody's
guy?
Like, what is he doing?
What are you doing?
I'm just seeing what we got for the future.
And he immediately threw like three interceptions and they
yeah,
lost.
Yeah, that's right.
I got to look
that
up.
That's right.
The name's on the
tip of my
tongue.
It was a close game, yeah.
Nate Sudfeld.
That's it.
I was going to say Zorb Nudnik, but it's close, but not exactly.
Lars Nootbaar.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, good old Lars.
I love it. I kind of want to turn that next year into a daily feature on our show. What did Lars Nootbaar do last night?
Yeah. Nootbaar update. Please, looking please. For, what was it, searching for Mr. Nootbaar?
Mr. Goodbar, yeah, okay. Gotcha.
Dallas on the road against the Chargers.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a good matchup.
Mm-hmm.
Tennessee, if they get their stuff together, on the road in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
The Rams are on the road at Indianapolis. And by the way, Indianapolis just short months away from becoming America's team, as they are the first team to be featured on an in-season edition of Hard Knocks.
You're kidding me.
We saw HBO do this with the college game featuring ASU, among others.
I'm glad I missed that news. Is there any team in the NFL more nondescript?
It's like they said, they only agreed to it because they knew they were the most dull team in the NFL.
Yeah.
They don't have any, their coach is not interesting. They don't have any really like interesting players.
Their uniforms are dull.
They're in a very dull city. They're probably going to be a completely mediocre team this year. So not like a train wreck and not like a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah.
I had read a story on Pro Football Talk earlier in the week that Mike Florio put out there. And yeah, he gets referenced a lot because he's a pretty prominent guy. He's one of those guys that I don't agree with much of what he writes, but I agreed with this. He said, hey, there's an announcement coming out this week about the future of HBO's Hard Knocks. And he surmised it was the end of the show, that it's lost its cachet. It's no longer must-see television. He talked about how, you know, he begrudgingly watched, but only remembers the drone scene from the Cowboys being featured.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, yeah, they're going to announce it's over. And I thought, hey, you might be right. He was totally wrong. They're taking it in a different direction and now not focusing on training camp but focusing on the regular season. It's interesting that there is a team that's willing to participate in the regular season. You remember the Cardinals in the 2015 season. They participated in all or nothing.
Uh-huh.
But nobody from the outside knew about it.
No.
We're doing interviews at their facility going, why are there cameras on us?
I remember.
Oh, that's
right.
Why.
Oh, that's why. Yeah, that was done with a safety net where they knew they were going to be able to post-produce that.
Mm-hmm.
So they knew that there was going to be no, you know, surprises, right? So, so there's a difference to it. I do agree with that premise, that it's just, it's become tired, you know? It's just, it when you watch it now, it's not like you're a fly on the wall. It's almost like they're still trying to hide stuff from you. You're only seeing what they want you to see.
Yeah.
And that's not the magic of it. The magic of it is to actually see what football is really like.
Mm-hmm. It's gone away from that, definitely. You can text your thoughts to the FanDuel text line at 620-620 right now. Coming up next, Minnesota Vikings coming to town. We'll get the Minnesota perspective from Courtney Cronin, covers the Vikings for ESPN. You also hear her on ESPN Radio. That's straight ahead. Pickley and Murata. Live from the Ok-Chin Community Studios here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Football Friday with Bickley and Murata. Presented by 72 Sold. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
A couple days away from Cardinals, Vikings, State Farm Stadium, home opener for the Cardinals. Patrick Peterson's return. Lots of storylines here to give us the Minnesota perspective of this matchup. She covers the Vikings for ESPN.com. You can also hear her on ESPN Radio. Courtney Cronin, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Courtney, thanks so much for the time. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. I mean, I think going into this game, we got two fan bases with completely different reactions to week one. Cardinals fans thinking, oh, that was fun. Let's do this again. Where's the level of consternation among Vikings fans after losing to Cincinnati in week one?
I mean, you don't want to be in my Twitter mentions right now. It is a very toxic place. There's a big level of concern now, too, considering Anthony Barr has not practiced all week. Everson Griffin, who's in a limited situational role but still an important role for their pass rush, somehow got a concussion yesterday and wound up on the injury report after not being on there with a concussion on Wednesday, and he's not practicing today. And then there's a lot of concern about Eric Kendricks. He did not practice yesterday, showed up on the injury report with a quad injury. He's out there today. I would imagine just for how they're gonna do this with the injury report, they'll probably list him as questionable. But if you're down your top two linebackers against a team that has a very mobile, fast, quick, whatever other adjective you want to put in there for Kyler Murray, if you don't have those two players, good luck. I mean, it was already really tough last week. And it wasn't even from like a defensive side that there were so many concerns with the offense. But now you take a look at like all of the pieces that the defense might be missing, and you could, if you're a Vikings fan, you're probably thinking it's going to be a really, really long day and look even worse than it did last week.
Now, Mike Zimmer's got a reputation for being one of the better defensive-minded dudes in the NFL. What do you think he can or will concoct for Kyler Murray given those limitations?
I mean, given where the team stands right now and just how tough it is to climb out of an 0-2 hole if you find yourself in there, yes, I know it's a 17-game season, but that, like, look back at the numbers. Not many teams make it to the postseason after an 0-2 start. So the sense of urgency, I think you're going to start seeing Zim just pull out all the stops, which you probably weren't expecting them to have to do this early in the season. But when you lose to Cincinnati in a game that goes to overtime, I think for him, he looks at Kyler Murray, looks at all the weapons that they have on the outside and says, I've got to come up with my best, because this team is going to require my best, considering how they were able to attack Tennessee, who I still think the Vikings have a vastly superior defense to what the Titans are fielding right now. But it's when you have a quarterback who you can only hope that you can keep him in the pocket for as long as possible. When you see him go sideline to sideline and then launch that first down pass, I think he gained like 45 yards of just like net distance on that run. Like, you just know it's going to be a long day, and it's going to be really, really tough to try to contain him. And, you know, these corners got tested last week. We didn't see Patrick Peterson get tested. I would imagine he knows that. Peterson knows that the Cardinals are going to try to, you know, key in on somebody that they know really, really well and, you know, try to attack him when they, you know, if he winds up against, you know, any of the multitude of options. I mean, take your pick, whether it's Christian Kirk, DeAndre Hopkins, A.J. Green. I mean, they could be in for a very long day in the secondary.
ESPN's Courtney Cronin, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. I've been marveling at the number of similarities between the week one opponent Tennessee and the Minnesota Vikings going into this game. One of those, and we didn't know it going into the Tennessee game, Courtney, is that they struggled at left tackle. Taylor Lewan and Lamb both got just abused by Chandler Jones. That similarity is Rashad Hill at left tackle for the Minnesota Vikings had a tough week one. New offensive coordinator Clint Kubiak, how much help do you think he can realistically give Rashad Hill in pass protection, knowing that J.J. Watt's on the other side?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen this happen before, like where they've, you know, Khalil Mack, for example, in Chicago, guy that they face twice a year, where they end up, you know, looking to their tight ends for more max protection in those situations, but usually a team has like one really elite pass rusher and you don't have to worry about the other side as much. Well, you have JJ on the other side. Whatever you do to like try to help Rashad, you're probably not able to help Brian O'Neill as much. And I think you'd probably think that O'Neill, just given his stature and you know how good he is and where he's at in his career, he won't need as much help as Rashad Hill, who just like struggled all day with Trey Hendrickson in week one. But you're going to be in a situation where you have to have inline blockers and your tight ends probably are not going to be that involved in the passing game because they're going to be trying to chip and help. Like that's just something that is a role that they need to play because I mean, you guys saw it. I watched back that film, from the Tennessee game and they didn't do anything to help Taylor Lewan. Like he went on there and said he got his butt kicked. Like he went on Twitter afterwards and was like, yeah, that was a really hard day. And it's just like when you have tight ends that are in line and then they're like going out to like block the other guy when they're like stacking the box, it's like, no, like, why don't you focus on 55 because he's really good and he's had three sacks by the end of the first quarter. Like I just, that game plan baffled me. But you'd like to think the Vikings saw that and said, we're not going to do that.
You know, from afar, it seemed like Mike Zimmer was not all that comfortable with Kirk Cousins' stance on the vaccine and all that stuff. I'm just curious, where is Kirk Cousins at right now in the arc of his career? There was a time when people thought he might be the next big thing, and I don't think he's been that. Who is he and where is he in his career right now?
That's a good question. I mean, I don't know who to compare him to a lot of times. Like, I think most people probably have him as a top 15 quarterback. Statistically, he can put up top 10 numbers, but does that yield wins for your team? Not necessarily, because, you know, the knock on him has always been when they're playing from behind because he's not able to get the team out ahead of the other team. Like, you know, for all intents and purposes, like, they've really struggled with that. So his numbers, like, he wasn't the problem per se last week. You know, his penalties and the offense, none of which were on him. You know, the offensive line really struggled, but he wasn't able to lift them out of that situation. And I think some of that has to do with the fact that he looks pretty uncomfortable behind some of the, you know, some of the protections, like almost looks like he doesn't know where it is. And just it's a situation where I think the state of this offensive line, they've tried to fix it, but like everything's blown up in their face so far. Like you don't have Christian Darrisaw at left tackle. You drafted him to play. You don't have him yet. Wyatt Davis hasn't done anything and you spent a third round pick on him. So like, I think that with Kirk, it's a matter of like Zim said this at halftime last week and then tried to walk it back. You know, he thought he was holding on to the ball too long in certain situations. And that's kind of always been Kirk's MO. So, you know, I think he's at a point right now. I mean, this season, everything is coming to a head. Why? Because he's got a $45 million cap hit next year, and they need to make a decision. Hey, he's going to get us out of this 0-1 hole. Like they'll make the playoffs, whatever, whatever, and then they'll extend him. Or I don't know what you do next year. Do you just eat, you know, just kind of like eat it financially and like suck it up and take the $45 million cap hit, keep him on your roster, and then, you know, depending upon how the season goes, where are you in the order to draft a quarterback? Hmm. You know, they spent a lot of money on him. They just gave him in 2020 a 2-year, $66 million, nearly fully guaranteed extension on top of, you know, what happened in 18 when they brought him here for 3 years, $84 million, all guaranteed. He won you one playoff game. Like, I think if you're ownership, you have to have a very hard look at yourself and look at this team and be like, are we still going in the direction that we want to go in? Because there's one thing to be at a table, the cool kids table, where you're a relevant team, you're always in the conversation in the NFC, but like to actually be at the table, like the elite table where it's like, these are year in and year out playoff teams. That might require a change of direction from where they are right now.
Courtney, great stuff. Thanks so much for joining us, giving that perspective. We appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you. Courtney Cronin, ESPN Vikings reporter, also ESPN Radio. She joined us on the Coulter Automotive Group sports line, Coulter Nissan, west of the hassle. Visit coulternissan.com. Coming up next, Patrick Peterson says it's just another game to him. Will he be able to prove it on Sunday? We'll explore next. Bickley and Murata mornings here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Football Friday with Bickley and Murata. Presented by 72 Soul, 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Oh. Sunday will be another game for me. You know, it's just the next game on the schedule. Obviously, it's my old team. But, you know, I'm treating it like another game on the schedule.
Good luck with that. Patrick Peterson speaking with the Minnesota media. Leading up to Sunday's game, Vikings in town to take on the Arizona Cardinals, home opener for the Cardinals. Vikings looking to bounce back after a really, really poor first weekend performance against Cincinnati. By the way, didn't ask Courtney Cronin for a prediction.
Well,
but she painted a picture. This might not be pretty for the Vikings this week.
Yeah, but she did say the Vikings defense, and this probably was prior to the recent injuries, was far better than what Tennessee's putting out there. Yeah, so,
but if you've got no Griffin, no Barr, and no Kendricks, potentially, that hurts things.
And it's kind of why I asked the Kirk Cousins questions, because Kirk Cousins is a guy that, at the very least, he's a smart quarterback. He knows where to go with the football, okay? And I'm not saying Ryan Tannehill doesn't, but I'm just wondering if Kirk Cousins has that kind of game in him where he can keep a diminished Vikings team in the game by himself. I don't know that he can.
Yeah. More from Patrick Peterson. He made that statement early on in his media availability. But a follow-up question was, is that easier said than done to treat a game like any other game when there could be emotional ties?
Not at all, because naturality, it is another game. I have to go out there and be at my best for my team. I have to go out there and be dialed in for 60 minutes, not allowing any big plays, not allowing catches, doing whatever I need to do to make sure, you know, I slow my guy don't show up on the stat sheet. You know, so that's my main focus. That's my main goal going into this week. And I'm working towards that all week this week.
Look, whether or not that's his attitude, he's saying the right things going into this game. The X factor in all of this, and we've been wondering about it now for, really, since the schedule came out after Patrick Peterson went to Minnesota, and we saw that the Minnesota Vikings were the week two opponent and the home opening opponent for the Cardinals, is what is the crowd going to be like? And since that time in April when the schedule came out, there's been different reasons for reaction to Patrick Peterson. He's been acutely aware of everything that's gone on in Arizona, all the way down to taking some level of offense to number 21 being issued to a player who played the same position that was basically brought in to replace him,
right?
In Malcolm Butler. And he was asked about, you know, do you feel like you were respected by the Cardinals organization on the way out?
You know, I said what I said a couple months back. You know, now my focus is on truly just going out here and just trying to get a dub and play my best football.
And the reason why I bring all that up, Vic, is because the reaction of the fans in a full house, the first full house at State Farm Stadium since 2019, that's going to have a lot of effect on whether or not Patrick Peterson can treat this as a regular game.
Well, and I'm telling you, this is the thing, this is the wild card in all of it, and it's going to be, what does that building sound like, and how does it motivate the Cardinals? Keep in mind, and I've drawn the analogy to what the Suns were greeted with when they opened the doors and let people in full, and how magical that was, and how it completely took Suns players by surprise. It's been a while since the Arizona Cardinals have played before a full stadium of their fans. They got to do it on the road, but Tennessee fans there wasn't a whole lot of juice in that stadium.
It wasn't even sold out from what I heard.
Yeah.
And there was a big group of Cardinal fans that were there.
There was. And that's another thing about the Bird Gang. They've been traveling phenomenal the last few years. They've been great at that. So to me, this is one of the elements that I think could really lead to a raucous kind of afternoon in a good way for the Cardinals, because they're going to get out there. And if Cardinals fans represent a good majority of the people in the building, and they're really loud because they're really grateful to be back in that building, and they're really stoked about this football team, this might lift the Cardinals. I mean, we saw what it did to the Suns. And it's been a while since there was a time when State Farm Stadium had a real definitive home field advantage. That's waned in the last 5 years, for obvious reasons.
It used to be called False Start Field.
Yeah.
That's how good it was.
But you remember the stats? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They'll probably rekindle those stats on the big board tomorrow,
sure,
the first time they get a false start.
Right, exactly.
Or Sunday, excuse me.
But we all know for the last 5 years it hasn't been the same, because there's been a lot of boring afternoons in that stadium the last five, watching Josh Rosen, watching Mike McCoy.
both of them at the same time.
We're watching both of them. Sam Bradford.
I hope you didn't blink when you were watching Mike McCoy's offense.
Josh Rosen.
Because you might have fallen asleep, or you just missed his whole tenure in Arizona.
And I would also think that after watching Suns fans impact the playing field or the basketball court the way they did, that Cardinals fans would be motivated to say, hey, okay, you know what?
Yes.
It's a new day around here, and we're going to bring it now.
But also, not only factor in that there was hardly any football fans in that stadium. I think there was a total of 4,500 fans for three games. That does, you know, very few people got to experience it. So you have the absence of going to something you love to go to. Plus, somebody pointed this out to me on Twitter this week. It's going to be a while before the next home game. They go on the road for the next two. That might amp up the Cardinal crowd a little bit more. And obviously, the crowd is tied to what the team does. And if the team can somehow duplicate or come close to duplicating what they did in week one, that place is going to be electric.
Yeah, no, it will. I think the NFC West is going to take a couple of dings this weekend. I don't know who's going to lose. I do. I think Seattle's going to have a handful with Tennessee. I think the 49ers are going to have a handful with Philadelphia. I don't know what to make of the Colts. So I don't think the Rams are necessarily
boring.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So this is a great chance, and this is a great opportunity that they cannot squander, because you've got a winnable road game next week, and then you've got the first big divisional test after that. So I'm stoked. I hope Sunday's game represents a new era of fandom at State Farm Stadium, because that sellout streak was at 144 when the pandemic hit. I assume it means the sellout streak is over.
No.
You think they'll continue it?
Extenuating circumstances, man.
I guess you could argue that.
Yeah.
But you played a football game when it wasn't sold out. Yeah, maybe you're right.
You didn't have the option to sell anything.
Yeah. Well, you're right.
That thing's alive and
well. Do you
think so? Oh, absolutely. I would check the media notes, but I'm sure it's in there. And it should be.
I couldn't quite get a definitive answer on that yesterday.
No?
No.
I know you referenced it in your
column. I just wrote it in a safe way that the streak was interrupted last year.
It's over, but is it over?
Exactly.
It's nothing is over until we say it is.
Exactly. Now, before we go to break, Jarrett, what do you think? Do you think Vinny and I should be trying some of that whitefish?
Ugh.
Well, the big boss at the station is offering to buy delicious birthday burritos.
I hope you accepted that offer.
I did. Okay. But I don't know if you want to save that for the end of the show. Because I don't want to.
No, if breakfast burritos are showing up here, then no, there will be no whitefish consumption.
Yeah, okay.
A whitefish burrito.
Oh, I was just going to suggest that. What white a great tacos. Name for a band.
Whitefish burrito.
Whitefish burrito.
What do we think,
Jared? I complimented you yesterday for your restraint. This morning, you went at that bagel. You went at it, Jared.
I've already had a bagel smothered in smoked whitefish and tomatoes. I had a delicious donut, and I'm about to eat a burrito, and it's not even 9 a.m.
Yeah, hey, when that man breaks a fast, he can break a fast.
He knows how to break a fast. Yeah. That's right.
Social Studies with Sarah Cazell straight ahead. It's Bickley and Murata on this Football Friday, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.